Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Your Own Personal Beatles with me, Jack Felling.
And me, Robin Allender. Hello.
How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah, how are you doing?
Not too bad. It's a slightly miserable day in London, recording this on a Sunday night after some pretty alarming thunderstorms.
Yeah.
But yeah, all good.
Yes, it's been good. We've got a great episode coming up, and also Jack and I recorded our first monthly bonus podcast episode for Patreon members last week, which was a lot of fun. We recorded it together with cans, with pizza. It was great.
Yeah, I mean, there was so much, you know, I was wondering what we were going to talk about after such a long time of, you know, waffling on about the Beatles, but it was great. It was really, I think we covered a lot of ground. We talked a lot about, you know, our learnings over the last year, our experiences of doing the podcasts, and you know, just sort of growing on our Beatle journey a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. We sort of talked about the kind of taking apart some of the songs in terms of thinking about the chords, the way they might be composed as well. And then it got slightly more kind of blurry towards the end as well, as the beers hit home.
Yeah, and the guitars came out as well.
Yeah,
you have been warned.
Yeah. No, it's good. It's a really fun episode. And, please head on over to our Patreon to have a listen.
Yeah, you can go to patreon.com/personalbeatles. And, if you join up for that, you not only get your monthly bonus episode, but you'll get ad-free extended versions of all the other podcasts, including this one. So there's some fun extra chat for this one coming up with Felicity Ward as well, which is well worth engaging with.
Engage with our content. Felicity Ward was just brilliant. It was such a fun episode. Fair to say we went quite far round the houses. And it really ended up being just a long chat about formative experiences with music. And obviously Beatles are a part of that, but we ended up talking about a lot of other musical influences. And we kind of wandered quite far because by the end we were talking about therapy. and we sort of talked about her new show, Wakefield, which sounds really good. And as always, there's a lot of White Album love in there.
Bit of Abbey Road in there too. And then... so a lot of chat about sort of like 90s formative records, as
yes,
you say.
Yes, definitely.
Bit Weezer. Big Beat, bit of Weezer, bit of Wilco.
Urge Overkill as well, which I enjoyed.
Very much so.
Correction Corner. I talked about everybody's got something to hide except for me and my monkey. And I said it does that riff five times. It does it six times, Robin. You know, the...
Yes.
Which is still...
Which I guess is still weird, but not quite as remarkable.
It's not quite as weird, but it's still very irregular. Anyway, it's so six.
Yeah.
But there we go.
Yeah, you'll also learn some great Australian slang in this, which I'm a big fan of as well. So if you don't know what a doof-doof or an ecky is, then prepare to be educated.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, so thanks so much for Felicity for doing that. If you're enjoying the show, then please give us a nice rating on Apple Podcasts if that's where you're listening, because that really helps other people find it. And I know we bollock on about it every week, but it really is helpful. So please do that. We're very appreciative. And if you want to, you know, get in contact with us, like if you want to share your personal Beatles with us, then you can go to personalbeatles.com/contact, or you can email me jack@homespunsounds.com, and we do read all of the emails. We do love them. But yeah, so have you got anything for this week?
Yeah, well, I was just... So after we did our recording sesh last week, which was quite fun in a way, because it made me realise we spent so little time actually hanging out in the same space together. It's all been done kind of virtually. And it's quite a weird moment when we sort of met each other and again, and we're like, I said, so what do you do again? You know, we had to do a lot of background chat. You know, we talked for about 36 hours about the Beatles, but we realised, you know, it was quite nice, that, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really nice. Well overdue. Yeah,
definitely.
And hopefully we'll be able to record more of these, like, IRL as well.
Yes.
Yeah, it's always a slightly different experience when people are in the room, as good as the technology is and all
that. Yeah, yeah. But after we did our recording, we listened to a few records, which was really good fun. And one of the bands I played you is one of my favourite bands, which is The Clientele. And I'm a huge fan of The Clientele because I think it's interesting. If you get into the Beatles in the 80s or 90s, or if you got into the Beatles then, you kind of... Do you think it's a kind of default that you become kind of nostalgic? Because you basically become... Your favourite band is in the past. So nostalgia becomes a big part of being a Beatles fan in some ways.
Yeah, and I guess because it's such a high watermark as well, that you're always... They're always the great sort of litmus test for everything else you get into.
Yeah, and it's not to say, you know, we live completely in the past, but you do, I think it does kind of tend to affect... Being into something from the past does tend to affect the way you think about these things. And I think it's really interesting because I think, in terms of musical influence, I think there are certain bands that may be influenced by the Beatles in terms of kind of trying to emulate them, let's say. But there are other bands, which is where The Clientele come in, where it's like actually what they're trying to do is trying to express more like what that nostalgia feels like. I think, and I think, you know, we've talked a lot about Boards of Canada as well before, being big Beatles fan. I think there's something similar with The Clientele. So The Clientele sound very like it's kind of remembered music from the 60s. It's kind of been processed in some kind of weird way, like you're kind of hearing it on some kind of fuzzy radio or something. And so we'd really like to, I would love to have Alistair McLean on from The Clientele, but this is an interview he did.
If you're listening.
If you're listening, yeah. this is an interview he did for Pitchfork about 10 or 11 years ago. And they ask, what was your experience with the Beatles and do they hold a special place for you? And he says, absolutely and probably the place. I remember the period in the 1980s where the Beatles were terminally uncool. And it seemed to me then like they were just my little secret and the rest of the world didn't know anything about them. I'm kind of nostalgic, keyword, for those days. I think the Clientele are one of probably about 6 million bands who formed to be bigger than the Beatles. That was our plan. And you still catch yourself, age 34, age 35, thinking maybe the next record will get us to, like, please, please me. Maybe at the age of 36, I'll be at the place John Lennon was at age 20. As time goes on, you realise that that's a bit more of a full-on hope each year. I still love their music so much, but in terms of what they represent, they're baffling and overwhelming as well. And he says, I think what made them special is the way their voices sat together and the way he sings on... the way John sings on Strawberry Fields Forever, it's a very odd voice in the sense that it seems to be celebrating but also mourning at the same time. There's a quality of mourning to his voice which is very enigmatic. I thought that was a lovely quote because...
Yeah, brilliant.
I think... When you listen to The Clientele, you can see that that's kind of what they're channeling, is that slight strangeness as well. So I can heartily recommend that band. And if Alistair McLean is listening, then please come on. It'd be great to chat to you.
Yeah, that's great. And that's definitely the kind of answer to a sort of very short question that a true Beatles fan would give. So obviously thought about that a lot.
Yeah, because basically the prompt for it was basically that, because I think it was 2009, this interview, was that the Rockstar, the game, had just come out. So it was like, there's a lot of Beatles around at the moment. It was like, then let's go down this.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Great stuff. Brilliant. Well, we'll crack on with today's episode with the brilliant Felicity Ward. You can get in touch with us in all of the usual ways by following us on all the social media, etc., at Personal Beatles. And thank you so much for listening. Check out the Patreon. We'll be back at the end of the show. And all the way through it as well, but back.
Yeah. It's always weird.
In our current form.
Yeah, in our current form, we'll be back. Our present day selves will be back.
Yeah. But it'll be in the past.
For you. For the you.
Okay. Enjoy the show. On this episode of Your Own Personal Beatles, Robin and I are absolutely delighted to be joined by the fantastic comedian Felicity Ward.
Hi.
Thank you for joining us.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me. I just realised that two out of three of us have guitars in the background.
Oh, yeah.
It's a clean sweep, isn't it?
Yeah, I've got one here.
Can you do it? Have one. I couldn't see the... I'll look at that. Yeah. There you
this
go.
This thing.
Yeah. This didn't even know. You've got a few there. Is that? Do you have a little music room?
I've got quite a few. This is my little office slash studio. Do I play? Just a bit. Any good? Not for me to say.
What guitar have you got there, Felicity?
This is actually my 21st birthday present, which was 3 years ago. And don't have to laugh that hard. I'm joking. It's a Cort. It's a Cort semi-acoustic. I don't even know the thing, you know, I don't know anything more specific than that. I just went into a music shop and I really liked it. And I always felt very insecure around guitars. I was in a teenage all-girl grunge band in the 90s, classic.
Nice. Yeah.
And I was the singer and a songwriter in the band. And then I started to play guitar because my sister got guitar lessons for a year and she really only did it so she could make out with other guys in bands or guys in bands, not other guys in bands. But she taught me three chords. She taught me A, E and G, and then that is literally the lessons that I've
had. The truth.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's great.
What was the name of the band? We're quite interested in formative band names.
The name was, well, it had a series of names first. I think we had Special Patrol Group, which is the name of the hamster from The Young Ones. You know how 90s bands were all about very specific references that you would only get if you're painfully cool. Not that we were painfully cool. We just wanted other people to, like, get us. It was about being as esoteric as possible with references. Yeah. And then the second name we had was Wunderbar. And then just because we thought an umlaut was really cool. And then we ended up going with Bastian, who was the little boy that reads the story in The Neverending Story.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, that's just a really good band name.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I should have been in a band called it.
Yeah. So we always, it seems like a lot of people we talk to are this... this generation where grunge was a big thing, and also we talked to a lot of comedians. So I'm kind of interested in the music comedy crossover. So did you want to be a musician first and then do comedy, or have you? How do the two relate in your life?
I have literally never wanted to be a stand up comedian until I did my first gig.
Right.
Never, and I was 27, I think, when I did my first gig, maybe 28, I can't remember. I think, I was turning 28 that year. But no, I was really interested in acting, and acting is what I always wanted to do. And then I sort of fell into sketch comedy in my early 20s, mid-20s, and then that sort of went very well. So, you know, after trying since I was seven to be a represented actor, and then, you know, within 12 months of doing my first sketch on stage, we had a TV show, so I'm like, oh, okay, so maybe I should lean towards comedy. I don't know if it's definitely a generational thing with comedians of my generation. Mm-hmm. So people who are in like a similar class to me, you know, they, you know, I don't mean class as in social class.
Yeah,
I mean people who are sort of within five school or 10 years of starting around the same time. But that seems to be a really common thread with lots of comics, or lots of comics that are my friends anyway.
Mm-hmm. And were you playing to sort of, you know, open up the Beatles into it? Was that a formative thing when you started playing guitar?
No. My first introduction to the Beatles was it was actually John Lennon. And I can't remember if we had Imagine or the Best of John Lennon, but we had the tape because my uncle was a huge music fan. So he would buy the vinyl and then he would record it for us. And then we would play it in the, you know, our little Datsun. And then I remember when I honestly still remember the moment. I must have been seven, and like many children, I assume, of the 80s, we put on a lot of painful lip sync shows to our parents in backyards.
it was the TikTok of its day, you know.
It really was. it was, you know, tennis rackets galore for guitars and lots of Dire Straits. And I remember saying, I remember finding out the day that John Lennon was in the Beatles. I didn't know.
Right,
and it was like a real whoa. And I was seven or something. I'm like, my whole life's been a sham. Or 7 years of them.
That's great.
And then the Beatles are like, I've had a really interesting journey with the Beatles. I haven't. But my mum was really into the Beatles. My dad was into the Stones and my mum was into the Beatles. And the album that she played the most and we had was the White Album, which is like a really cool experimental album to get involved. So I'm just not a Sgt. Pepper's girl. I'm like, oh, yeah, cool. But when people are like, the greatest albums of all time, I'm like, have you listened to like the White Album or Abbey Road or like this? Sgt. Pepper's is cool.
Yeah. But the White Album is a good one. There seem to be a lot of playful kids' songs, like Rocky Raccoon, you know, you obviously respond to at a young age. It seems like there's a whole suite about animals. That's the first thing I remember noticing about the White Album.
Yeah, right.
It's like Blackbird, Piggies, Rocky Raccoon all in a row or something, aren't they?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'd never noticed that.
Yeah.
I always imagined Bungalow Bill as an animal as well.
Really?
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
until I listened properly to he was just like a sort of like he reminded me of the sort of counterpart to what was he called, the one in the cartoon with Cyril Sneer? That's basically how I imagined him. Yeah, it's a sort of you know, arch enemy of Roy.
Yeah,
Raccoon.
Right. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just I mean like that is the upside of having 80 songs on an album or however. Yeah. I know it's not 80, but, you know, when you've got a double album, you can really show all spectrums of what your band does. And then you've got things like, you know, Rocky Raccoon, but then you've got Martha, My Dear, and then you've got Everybody's Got Something to Hide Except for Me and My Monkey, which is maybe my favourite rock song of the Beatles.
Right, yeah.
That song really still gets me. It's just like it's so hard and the drums and the guitar come in at once and they just punch you. They're like, fucking listen to me. And you're like, okay, what's happening? And then Ringo just goes off.
Yeah. Well, is it a bell, isn't it? Just the bell ringing all the way through.
It's, or it's like the inner part of a cymbal. I don't know which one it is.
And that's a great song.
It's a great song.
That's an interesting choice for sort of fave song. There's another really good, interesting bit in that. Well, interesting, you know, you might need to expand your definition. But there's you know, that kind of breakdown with a diddle-a-diddle-a-diddle-a-diddle-a-diddle-a-diddle.
Yeah.
There's like, it does it five times. It's a really weird number to do of a riff, you know. They're obviously just fucking about. Let's do you want to do four or eight? Let's do five.
That's five. I'm not one of these four to the floor people, okay?
Yeah.
I'm four to the floor and then, you know, one for luck.
One for luck, yeah, yeah. But, yeah, that's great. So was that were you quite young then when you were getting into Everybody's Got Something
to Hide? No, by then, so because we had Imagine was in the car, or John, we listened to John Lennon a lot more, and then when we got a CD player, so my family we weren't poverty stricken. We weren't like that kind of poor. We were poor, but we didn't know we were poor, that kind of thing. But with technology, that was a real marker of where we were compared. We were behind with lots of things. So I think we got a CD player in maybe 92 or 93, but Mum was like, we're getting a CD player. So she got one of those six stackers.
Oh, nice.
Oh, which is such a great idea in theory, except for the 15 minutes between swapping CD cartridges.
Are you sure we can just get one where you just take it out and put another one in? No, no. So this is a six stacker.
No, this is the future.
This is
and
the
then
future.
You can't remember which one is in there. So you've got to, you're like, oh, yeah, let's put on, you know, Aretha Franklin. You're like, oh, that's not what I'm looking for.
Yeah, yeah. Have you got wait 5 hours? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I sort of got into the White Album when I was 12 or 13. And then, look, because I was I really cut myself off from a lot of music that I liked as a teenager because I wanted to be exclusive in what I listened to. I wanted to be – I was, an, you know, an arsehole about the music that I listened to.
Yeah. I'm not saying yes as in like,
sure,
oh, yes,
Robin, I felt that. You're like, I get that vibe.
It seems like you were an arsehole.
Yeah, that really comes across now.
I massively identify with that.
But I think we've talked about this when we had Johnny, our friend Johnny White was on the podcast, and we were talking about these weird rules you make for yourself at that age. I must be into this and I can't like that kind of thing. Yeah,
absolutely. Like, what a shame. Why would you cut yourself from music that you like?
Yeah.
Because no one else is, like, losing from what you do. Like, the example that I gave, the other podcast I did was called My Teenage Band, I think. So I've talked about this at length recently. But it was Pulp Fiction came out. And a girl who was in my group who I really liked, but because she had blonde hair and wore short skirts and, like, makeup, she was like, is Exit the Dragon Urge Overkill's first album? I'm like, okay, we don't listen to Urge Overkill anymore.
Right. I love that album. What, so she liked Urge Overkill, you were like...
Yeah, she heard that. She heard Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon from Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Which got a lot of people into Urge Overkill. I was like, okay, I'm out. Burn my... I mean, I've still got Bottle of Fur CD single.
That's great that you mentioned. That's a big album for me and my brother, Exit the Dragon.
Is it?
Yeah, like, and I've never met anyone who's heard of it. It's basically they had this, to the context, they had this huge hit with the cover song for Pulp Fiction,
Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon. Yeah.
And then they followed it with this really, really overblown, very 70s, quite Beatlesy in places album. Totally epic. Like, I'm sure there was a lot of cocaine going on and stuff.
Yeah.
Although it's actually quite post drugs, actually, isn't it? Because there's stuff. But it's really beautiful. There's some amazing songs on it, and production is wild. It's great. It's a really good album.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of crossover with the 90s and the 70s. You know, it's the 20-year throwback that you try to recreate. And they had long hair and flares and, you know, the white wraparound sunnies.
Yeah, there were a couple of, like, absolutely brilliant from that period interviews in NME with them where it seemed like they were such, like, a cartoon rock and roll band.
Amazing.
You know, they were so... They took the journalists, like, to, you know, around LA and stuff. It was very, very silly.
I don't believe I've ever spoken to anyone that's heard of Urge Overkill since I was a teenager.
Yeah.
Because the other thing is over here is that, like, lots of, and quite rightly so, lots of British people listen to, you know, we're very into Britpop and we're very into the British scene, whereas in Australia we absolutely, that came over, but we had a lot of access to American music too, where it feels like it didn't travel the same way over here maybe, or maybe it did and just the people that I know don't, you know, weren't that into it. But, like, a lot of the music that I listen to and my... Big, big bands of the 90s are all American, like Pavement, Pixies, Weezer, Breeders, Urge Overkill, Lemonheads. It just goes on and on.
Yeah, yeah.
So where do the Beatles sit in the sort of cultural landscape in Australia? Because I don't really, I mean, I'm guessing they're as ubiquitous as they were anywhere else, but were they, did they have a massive resurgence in the 90s like they did here? Or are they, you know, how often would you hear them in a car or on the radio or in a restaurant or something?
That's a really interesting question. There's a point where bands that you know as an adult now were oldie bands when you were young. But then there is a point of time that you start to appreciate that all music is timeless if it's good. You know, that it's not like, you know, like when I was a teenager, I'd hear Fleetwood Mac and go, it's one of the oldie bands, and they play them on, like, the Gold FM kind of stations.
Yeah. Because I think that's a bigger thing in, like, America and Australia than, like, we don't really have an oldies. And we had, like, Capital Gold or whatever, but AM radio wasn't really a thing in the UK.
Yeah.
I suppose Capital Gold is probably the same thing.
Mm.
Yeah. But I don't think, there wasn't a sort of culture of, like, listening to oldies, really.
My experience of oldies was I used to get a lift to school with the design technology teacher. because he lived near me, and he had classic gold on every morning. And, you know, I started the journeys. So when in year seven, when I was 11, I was obviously very shy and didn't really talk. And he gave me a lift to school every day for 5 years. Well, actually 7 years.
But I
don't think I ever really had a conversation with him because I just couldn't get out of that.
Too busy listening to the Eagles.
Yeah, I couldn't get out of that awkward. I really feel like I need to catch up with him and just say, sorry, you gave me a lift for 7 years and we never spoke. Like, how are you?
But he probably got it. He was like, oh, okay, this is a kid that needs some social encouragement, and I'm not the person for that because I teach design and technology.
But Classic Gold was a really good... you just heard so many songs which you wouldn't have heard otherwise, because they were sort of the kind of faintly naff songs of the 60s and 70s that maybe didn't have the kind of, you know, classic, like, they didn't play that much Beatles or Stones, but it was like, you know...
Maybe it was a sort of financial thing.
Yeah, possibly, yeah, like, you know, Blackberry Way, The Move, and...
The Turtles.
Easy Beats, stuff like that.
Yes, Easy Beats. You're speaking my language there, Robin. Throwing in a little Australian band.
Yeah. Well, that's one of my favourite ever songs, Friday on...
Oh, unbelievable.
Is it Friday on My Mind?
Friday on My Mind. Yeah, my mum was a huge Easy Beats fan.
It's got about five choruses. It's ridiculous. It just keeps going up and up and up. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary piece of music. I suppose that's what mum really had. Mum really had a passion for 60s music. Mm. And I worked in a kitchen when I was 16 or 17 washing dishes. Mm-hmm. And they used to have this show at 6 o'clock on a Saturday night called Rock Around the Clock. And all they would do was play 50s and 60s music. So I sort of had this weird, regular introduction to music that I wouldn't have heard otherwise. And what's his name? Glenn, the linesman, Yeah, Glenn Campbell. So, you know, I was like 17 singing. Glenn Campbell washing dishes, which is very uncool.
Well, I think that sounds really cool. I mean, maybe that's from our present day perspective. You know, but yeah.
But as far as the Beatles having a car, I suppose I just think of one, it's quite difficult for me because I've lived in the UK for 8 years now. And I was talking to another comic who's Canadian. And there are some things, it's like the worlds have blurred now, and there are some things that I'm like, I think that's what we use the same word in Australia for. Mm. And then I'll hear another word and go, oh, God, no, we say that. So, you know, I've sort of had British culture or living here for 8 years. That's the longest I've lived in any city apart from where I was born, which was not a city. it had 1,500 people. So I suppose if I think about it from where I grew up, which is a place on the Central Coast, which is like an hour and a half north of Sydney, Beatles would have been played at parties. There would have been Beatles on the radio. I sort of think of the Beatles as all-encompassing and forever, if you know what I mean. And I don't know if it's obviously the same here because they're British and they change music forever. And I think that when you're from a country, there is an extra level of patriotic enthusiasm or pride. I don't know.
Mm. Yeah, but they were just always kind of in the ether, as it were, for you.
Yeah, they're just always around. And actually... I think I was about 17 or 18 and I had a girlfriend who went to a different high school, but we caught the bus together and she was into the Beatles, and I was like, I felt like I should be into the Beatles, but I had this weird thing, and I still have it with things. I don't want to listen to something in case I don't like it. I'd rather just go, oh, it's probably not for me.
Right, yeah.
You know? Well,
I kind of
know. I've got a lot of those things that I've been saving up to get into in sort of later life because I just... Yeah. Yeah, I have that thing of being... Either they're slightly intimidating or there's people... You know, I have it a bit with Pink Floyd. I have it a bit with Nick Cave, actually, where I've just been too sort of overwhelmed by... How much I'm gonna like? I'm gonna seriously like this when I get into it, and I want to be ready.
I have it a bit with Can, where it's like so many people talk about Can, and I love lots of music from that era. I love Noi, but I've tried with Can, and it's like I'm sure I'll get it one day.
I don't know what Can is. Yeah,
they're a German band from the 70s and 80s, kind of very, very experimental, very like groove based.
Sure.
I just
very cool to like.
Yeah, cool to like. Let's say, but I just, am I not cool? I just don't know. I just, it's never clicked for me. I don't know why. It's
but that's at least you've tried it.
I've tried.
You know?
I've tried.
But like I would hear, I suppose when, even when I was in my 20s and I remember, I think Joe Strummer died maybe in my 20s.
Right, yeah.
And people were talking about him and I'm like, oh, I feel like I should know more about Joe Strummer or Nina Simone. And then, you know, like I watched a documentary on Nina Simone about 5 years ago. I'm like, Jesus Christ. Why wasn't I into her earlier? She's so important. She's so interesting, so troubled, so problematic, but so passionate, so talented. What a complicated life.
Yeah.
It takes someone dying sometimes.
Sadly, it does.
For you to be like, oh, yeah. I think a lot of people have found that with sort of Prince and people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of knew the hits and then were like, oh, my God.
But that's, it's interesting, though, because I think there's an interview with Johnny Greenwood where he was talking about how now, you know, when he was growing up, if you wanted to be into Miles Davis, it was quite a task, maybe. Yeah. You know, you'd have to go through a lot of albums. But now, like, you can just get everything at a click. And so being into it is a kind of, it has a very different meaning now, I suppose.
There's also not the financial investment, you know.
No.
Like, it used to be that if you're a teenager and you wanted to buy an album, whether it be a vinyl or a CD or a tape, whichever era you're from, it was like a lot of money to spend.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of risk that, you know, Weezer, for example, bought like Blue Album, obviously, is in everyone's top 10 perfect indie pop albums, classic. Pinkerton, they got a lot of flack for it at the time. Now, it's the 1-2 punch, mate.
Yeah.
And I remember going into a store when I don't know if Maladroit or Green came out next, but I put on some headphones at the record store and I listened to a couple of songs. I'm like, I'm not into this. So I didn't buy it because it wasn't me, like, because it was like that was a lot of money.
Yeah. That was, do you know that website, The Hard Times, which is kind of satirical?
Yes.
They did what, they did one about the Weezer box
I saw
set.
It.
It's just the Blue Album again.
12 times.
Yeah, it's just quite funny.
So funny.
They were a band that I was for some reason ashamed to publicly like as much as I did.
Yeah,
at the time.
Same.
Really?
Yeah.
I remember. Oh, right.
At that time,
I'm
I was
fascinated.
Into like quite serious experimental hip hop, and I was, you know, with a group of bigger boys who were like really into their stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure I've said this before, but I hid the Blue Album behind all my CDs at uni.
Oh,
I was,
wow.
Yeah, that's weird.
They're like my heart. Like,
I love it now, like, unembarrassingly.
Oh, that's so incredible. I've never heard anyone say that they're embarrassed about that. But at the same time, I remember having the opposite thing, that I sort of thought I had to not like hip-hop because that's what Westies listen to, which is, you know, probably has racist undertones. So people from Western suburbs listen to hip-hop and they dressed a certain way and, you know, we were surfies. So you're allowed to have a grunge surfy crossover. You can have a grunge skater crossover, you can have a skate punk, surf punk. They all sort of occupy some similar area on a Venn diagram. But like hip hop, trip hop, and that was massive in the UK. It just didn't click with me, and I think that there was a something with dissonant music, like the bands that used dissonant chords and that used minor keys. I felt nervous. I don't know. You know, I listened to Pavement. I listened to Weezer. I listened to the Lemonheads. They're like, A-G, A-G, C, 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 C.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That's a really interesting point, going back to there, you said when you're getting into music, the expense of it. Because I vividly remember that, because I was thinking since we started the podcast, like, why, if I was so into the Beatles at school and as a teenager, did I not get all the solo albums? And it was because I was worried they might be crap, and yeah. I didn't have money for it. Like, I didn't want to spend money on something that might be complete crap, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, you know, there was so much to dig. It's weird. You know, it was just every album was such a conscious investment.
Yeah.
And that I think I've said it before, but one of the reason why the White Album is the last one I got into is because it was so expensive.
Yeah.
And it still is to this day.
Like, yeah, a double vinyl's probably 50 quid back in the day or something. 60 quid. I actually don't know what vinyl is over here. But
well, still, it's, you know, expensive, still a lot. Now, I mean, still. It's because, yeah. I mean, it should be right that a double album is twice the price of an album, but in my head I wasn't having that. I was like, if they can make Now 1994, which is four discs, cheaper than the White Album, I just didn't really understand the
mathematics. I was reading the other day, you know, the Red Album, that could have all fitted on one CD because the songs were so short. But
they made it sort of more epic.
Well, they made, kind of had to be a double, because the blue one was a double. Anyway.
But I think you persevered a lot with records that, because you were like, fucking hell, I've spent 13 quid on this, I've got to like it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got to be something in here that I can redeem.
Yeah.
But then some of those records are ended. I remember being really excited to get Blue Lines by Massive Attack because I'd read so many good reviews. But I got it home and I was like, I don't know if I really like this.
Yeah.
But now it's, you know, Masterpiece, one of my favourite albums ever. But it was a bit too new and much for me. But now if I'd flick through it on Spotify, I'd be like, nah.
Well, I remember buying Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon, and I was like, you know what? I was early 20s, and I was like, I'm going to put this on. I'm going to lie down on my lounge room floor. I'm going to close my eyes, and I'm just going to have this experience. And I got to the end, and I'm like, well, I'm never listening to that again. I did my best, and that is not for me. I think money's on that album, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
Money is a great track. It's a great track.
I should have put Wizard of Oz on at the same time.
Yeah, that's right.
I've never got into Pink Floyd. I think that, I mean,
just not for me.
It just doesn't. Yeah, I think that might be it.
And sometimes, you know what? That's absolutely fine.
I think it's interesting because Pink Floyd are obviously huge Beatles fans, and I think, you know, we've had this chat before about what would have happened to the Beatles if they continued in the 70s, maybe if Brian Epstein hadn't died or whatever. And I think they would have turned into a bit of a Pink Floyd genesis, wouldn't they? They would have got quite overblown. Because you can hear the seeds of that in Abbey Road, can't you?
Yeah, yeah. And sliding guitars and sitars and, you know, it was on the horizon. They were about split up and come back together.
Yeah. But maybe they would have made, you know, 80s production stuff a bit more palatable, or
possibly,
you know,
found
a way to play the fretless bass that without giving Robin a bang.
Yeah.
Wings happened.
Yeah.
I listened and bought the albums. So I went through a period. I got into, like, big beat and dance music in the late 90s, as we all did.
Didn't we?
Because that's when big beat was created. Yeah. That's actually the era of music that I can go, oh, yeah, no, I only liked British music. I can't even think of an American big beat. It hit me right, and I don't know why, because I was, as I said, I was really into, like, warm indie pop rock.
Yeah. So we're talking kind of Chemical Brothers and
Chemical
stuff like
Brothers,
that.
Propeller Heads, Wise Guys, Basement Jacks, like Bentley Rhythm Ace.
Faithless.
Like, just what?
It was a hell of a scene.
Yeah.
Whew, What a couple of years, mate. Absolute blinder from the UK there.
Well, Chemical Brothers, there's a huge Beatles crossover, isn't there, with the Chemical Brothers?
Yeah, what is it, Tomorrow? Sun. Yeah, is it Tomorrow Never...
Setting Sun has got the kind of Tomorrow Never Knows beat. And Dig Your Own Hole is a very psychedelic kind of... It's really good, Dig Your Own Hole. It's great.
Yeah, it's almost like a classic album.
Yeah, totally.
So I got into that, and then I started going out with someone who was older than me and was into raves in the beginning of the 90s. So he listened to dance music. So then I started listening to dance music, and then we would go to what was then called, I don't know if they were called them here, dance parties. It would just be like a home rave. Was called a dance party. Or they'd be like warehouse dance parties.
Okay. With a few Class A's floating around.
A few. Yeah. And because we lived in like we lived regional, so there was some so we have something in Australia called a bush doof. So
just making these up.
Yeah, so a doof is a bush rave. So you just go to the booth, you go to the bush and people would just drop a shitload of eckies, as we called them. Our slang names were eckies for ecstasy, pills, obviously, chemies, as in chemicals. You on the chemies? I'm trying to think if – I think that was sometimes called Easter eggs, which was like code word, but that was like early 90s rave scene.
Right.
Yeah, when your parents are around.
Yeah.
A couple of Easter eggs tonight.
It's so embarrassing, isn't it?
It's June.
And then the reason that I brought up the dance scene was because I didn't buy any albums or regular music for like three years. Yeah. And I felt really scared about it. I was like, I don't know how to reapproach this. I don't know how to walk into a record store again. I don't know how to start again. And then my sister said something that was one of the most liberating things I'd ever heard. So I was about 23 and she said that she'd bought, I want to say Phil Collins, something like that. Mm-hmm. And I went, oh, which album did you get? And she goes, oh, I bought a Greatest Hits album. She's like, I'm not afraid to buy a Greatest Hits album. It blew my mind.
Yeah.
I'm like, she's not afraid. She's just buying what she likes. And so then I made a new rule for myself that if I heard a song on the radio, because I was working at a restaurant and I was making really good money because you get paid in Australia and our tips, we get tips as well in some places, but our minimum wage is really good.
Mm.
And I was working at a big restaurant in a big tourist part of town. And so I thought if I heard a song on the radio that I liked, then I had to go and buy the album because I was like, even it's the same with travel. Even when you have a bad trip somewhere, no pun intended, you never regret travel. And with music, you might go, oh, that's a shit album, but you still heard the whole album. You still have an educated opinion about it. So it's not like I just had to think like there's no bad investment in music. Mm. And so that's what I did for years, for like a decade, I suppose. I remember the first time I implemented that and I heard Taper Jean Girl by Kings of Leon, and that was on their Aha Shake Heartbreak album, which arguably is their best. And I heard that album, heard that song. I'm like, right, we're buying that. And then I heard Maps by the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. So I went Show Your Bones.
Fever to Tell?
Fever to Tell and I bought Show Your Bones just for good measure.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, you made some good choices, mate.
We sort of left you when you were younger with the Beatles albums in the six stack CD player. So how were the Beatles impacting you when you were at this stage of your life, when you were buying all these records?
Oh, at that stage. So, I think this is what I'm saying. You cannot do a short podcast with me because every story I've ever thought is like, what about this one? What about this one? I was telling you about my friend on the bus who went to a different school.
She was really into
the Beatles and she would talk about it. And I said, I only really know the Wired album. She's like, oh, you should get into this album. And I don't know why I was reluctant. She was very well versed in the Beatles. I liked Please Please Me. That wasn't my style, but I liked the album. But that was like, that was old folks music to me. Whereas the White album wasn't old folks music to me. It was still kind of futuristic rock. And then when I got into the habit of like buying albums regularly, I'd go into, they'd have, you know, $10 sales and stuff like that. And that's when I started buying Beatles albums. So I bought Rubber Soul, I bought Revolver, I bought Magical Mystery Tour. And then I think Abbey Road was probably the last one that I bought. And that was years ago again. And when I listened to Abbey Road, it happened, I was working with these guys. This one of them is still my manager, my best friend, and I was a tour manager, and it was like 2007 or something, and they would always talk about Let It Be and Abbey Road, and I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, whatever. Anyway, then I listened to Abbey Road, I'm like, holy shit, this album is incredible.
Yeah.
Like Golden Slumbers is just, oh, it's... You know, when Paul gets his growl on,
yeah,
it's pretty infectious, and it's it just gets to your soul. And then you've got like, yeah, is there a track on there that you don't go, oh, but what about, about? And it's an album, and it's, you know, like 10 songs or something, and it's almost like a reduced version, a concentrated version of. The White album, in that you've got Octopus's Garden. Mm-hmm. I think that's a Ringo song, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, good on you. It's funny how they wrote these. Actually, we all knew Octopus's Garden as a kid. We used to get it taught to us at school, but we had no idea it was a Beatles song.
Right, yeah.
It was like a fun song that you'd sing at assembly. Mm. I'd like to be, you know, all the 6-year-old little kids going, Octopus's Garden. It's a really fun
Felicity
song.
Felicity is doing an excellent impression of an octopus, as we speak.
Thank you so much. Even when it's radio, it's got to be a show.
Yeah. But Abbey Road at that age is, I mean, you know, we're talking about being into the grungy, rocky stuff. But, you know, the great thing about getting into Beatles albums at that age was like, oh, my God, this is really properly rocking as well. It's not like your parents' music and stuff. I remember that from, you know, I Want You, She's So Heavy. It was like, oh, my God, this is heavy shit, as Paul said. Yeah.
It's really sexy.
And
I suppose by that stage I was in my mid-20s, so I wasn't, it wasn't like my grunge years. I'd gone through my grunge. I'd gone through Big Beat. I'd gone through my Phil Collins greatest hits albums, hashtag no regrets. And then I started to listen to, I suppose I was on the road with these guys for so long that I just started listening to whatever they were talking about as well. Just like, okay, well, I wanted to be able to talk about Wilco too. Consequently, I got into Wilco.
Nice.
Yeah, Wilco are great, really great. And I've got a friend of mine who opened for Jeff Tweedy in America.
Oh,
like,
cool.
Like only in the last couple of years, I was like, that's so fucking cool.
Yeah. Jeff Tweedy's just brought out a book about how to write a song, hasn't he, which sounds really interesting because, I mean...
Unless it says make sure you're in a lot of pain, divorce your wife, nearly have your best album not made, then what are you going to tell me, Jeff? What are you going to tell me?
Let's get it back to the Beatles. What do you think of the? Because I've been. Are you a fan of the films at all? Do you know the films?
I don't know the films. They're something where I'm like, this. I genuinely don't think they're going to be for me.
Yeah, sure. Mm. Well, I mean, the thing is with the films is like, you know, Hard Day's Night is great, undeniably a great film. Help less so, and like. The thing with, because I've been rewatching Help in 15-minute chunks, but the thing that I really notice is Paul is so funny. Paul is brilliant in it, I think. Yeah. He's really funny. He's really like physical and just quite subtle as well. There's a brilliant bit where he's in the. Have you seen it recently, Jack?
No, it's one that I haven't revisited because of the sort of slightly icky.
Yeah, like, it's quite problematic. And there is, like, basically, it's like having a bad dream because it's just one plot, which is these people need to get the ring off Ringo, and it's just that reiterated, like, about 100 times. It's like, how many times can they try and get a ring back?
I remember watching it when I was about 7 or 8 and thinking I'm a bit above this.
Yeah. That's a lovely bit where Paul's in a... They're in an Indian restaurant and Paul is just trying to chat to the sort of dancer there, and he's just trying to motion to them that he's sort of trying to, you know, flirt with this girl, and it's so, like, pathetic. And it's really... he's like going like this, kind of pointing at her. It's really...
Funny.
It really made me laugh because he's very, very funny, Paul, I think.
He can be so very handsome, funny. Too.
Yeah, yeah.
He was so handsome. He still is.
He still is.
For an 120-year-old, he's a bad.
Have you heard the Mick Jagger and Dave Grohl song, Felicity?
No. No.
Brace yourself for it.
Brace myself with good feelings? Open my heart or bend my
amazing.
Knees?
Yeah,
okay.
It's fantastic.
Amazing in the sort of the purest definition.
Sure.
I liked it. It's just a bit of fun.
Dave Grohl can kind of do no wrong in my eyes. I love that man. I don't know if you've seen, there's videos like his daughter, he gets his daughter Violet to come out on tour and sing, and he just sits there playing the song and, like, love is just oozing out. He can't believe he's so lucky to have this daughter that wants to sing with him. He doesn't care about the 120,000 people that are singing all the lyrics to his song because he's been around for 35 years. But he's watching like music be passed on generationally, and that he can share that, and that his fucking cool 15-year-old daughter even wants to be seen with him, let alone sing to him. So I'm like, and that after the Sound City documentary, I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, fuck, that was great.
It's a great. I love a music doco. I love a music doco. Doco is what we call documentaries. Just in case.
A doof-doof doco.
A doof-doof.
He's got a lot of. I think it's the same people that hate Dave Grohl tend to be the sort of same people that hate Paul, in that.
Yeah.
For some reason, to be an artist, you have to be a complete twat to everyone, and that people are suspicious of just genuinely nice.
And you can't be available, you know, like Paul is always available to do whatever. And it's the same with, I don't know if you saw the YouTube drummer. She's like an 11-year-old British drummer, and she challenged people. And then she challenged Dave Grohl, and Dave Grohl's like, yeah, I'll do that. I got a lot of time for that. Dave Grohl... He's done his time. He was in one of the most influential rock groups of all time. Then he was in an extraordinarily successful and still is an extraordinarily successful rock band. He's also in Queens of the Stone Age, which is very reputable. Like, what else do you want from this guy? He's funny. Yeah. He's charming. He loves his daughter. He sings. He turns up and he sings his songs for you, and he wants you to be there. He's just a dad.
Like, and he's a shit hot drummer.
He's
as well,
a shit hot drummer.
Kind of overlooked.
You know, you're going to bag Ringo out.
He's a huge fan of Ringo. He's always going on about Ringo, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
What's not to like about Dave Grohl? What's your beef with the DG?
Well, I don't have a beef with the DG. I
think
just
that
find
was a rhetorical question to the world.
Yeah,
sorry, Ron. That wasn't the point.
Yeah, I was going to.
But you do sound like you've got like a whiff of beef.
Pastrami, maybe. I think he's. I mean, I obviously love his drumming, and I just find some of the Foo Fighters stuff quite a bit bland. Sorry.
Yeah, but that's his wings, you know.
Yeah.
Except it was, you know, success, very, very successful for a long time.
First album's great.
First album's great.
Is that Gun or Colour in the Shape?
It's the one, the eponymous one, yeah.
Right.
The one with the gun. Well, he was still playing everything. When the sort of the guy that looks like Jesus before he turned up.
Yeah. That was actually... the first song that I used to sing to my son when he was born. So he's nearly 18 months old now. And I got a job in Australia when he was 8 weeks old, and we went out and took it. That was a mistake. The job is fantastic. Like, the show is great. It's just come out. But I used to want to sing a song, and my husband got me an Alexa. And the Amazon speaker when I was pregnant. He said, so, you know, when you come in here at night and you've got the baby in your hands, you can just turn on the lights with your voice, and you can turn on the music, and, you know, when your hands are full. It was really considerate. But it's a lot of pressure for someone that grew up with CDs and tapes to think of music off the top of their head. Yeah. So the only song I could think of was Big Me by the Foo Fighters that I knew a lot of the words. So Frankie and I used to sing that. And that was the film clip, sorry, the music video. We call them film clips in Australia. Old habits die hard. The music video was set in Sydney at an iconic music venue called the Metro, where they're doing a Mentos ripoff ad.
Right, yeah, I remember.
So there was a Mentos ad, and they did a rip off of it, and they filmed it in Sydney. So, yeah, I used to sing that all the time to Frankie when he was little.
Nice.
Do you know what? I was just looking at the Abbey Road track list now, and I'm thinking, I'm surprised it gets as much credit as it does because it's actually a very feminine album. Like there's a lot of very gentle, loving or like really, really intimate songs on there, whereas, you know, people that usually call themselves Beatles fans, they're like, yeah, we like the rock. What's your favourite album? Abbey Road. You're like, oh, okay.
Tender beneath all that.
It's really tender, it is. And even Come Together is like, again, that's one of the slow and sexy. It's a very sexy album, as we've spoken about before. But, yeah, I think that that's interesting, that that's so highly regarded and yet it's so effeminate.
Yeah.
We've had a sort of conversation on Twitter where everyone were talking about their favourite Beatles albums in order, one of these things that happens on a slow news day.
well, Prince Philip just died.
Yeah, it wasn't a very slow day. I think people wanted something else to talk about. Yeah. But I don't see many. I would expect Abbey Road would top quite a lot of people, but... What do you think? I suppose Revolver is the big one for most people.
I think Sergeant Pepper's. When people like when they're like, oh yeah, you can't go past Sergeant Pepper's. You've got to show. I think Dave Grohl actually. I saw an interview with him.
Just keeps coming back. Your own personal.
I'm
Dave
not
Grohl.
Even like a big. Like I don't listen to them a lot. I don't listen to Foo Fighters except for Big Me. I just whenever I see Dave Grohl, I'm like. Yeah, I'll click that video. He's a nice guy. This lockdown's really been about Dave Grohl. I think the journalist said if you were going to show someone or an alien who'd never heard of rock music before, what would be the three albums that you would show them? And he was like, well, Sergeant Pepper's. And I was like, oh, yeah, I always forget about Sergeant Pepper's. I'm like, oh, yeah.
What is it about it that makes you sort of overlook it a bit?
Well, I think Sgt. Pepper is one that I've only gone back to. It's because it occupies such a big place in the canon of all music that it's like listening to it feels a bit like listening to Beethoven's Fifth. Or, you know, it's just why would I listen to something
I mean, that's
so
quite
famous?
Good.
Yeah.
But like. You know, but it's so well known. But I think since doing the podcast, I've gone back to it so much, and particularly the remasters. And yeah, I find it like unbelievably moving now. We had a barbecue the other day, and I've put Sgt. Pepper on, and I had to just stop the conversation and was just listening. Like people asking me questions, I was like, no, I just want to listen to this bit. Yeah, no.
Hang on, just for the next 10 seconds, there's a synth coming in here that's going to break your heart. Just looking at the track listing, like, I've remembered that, again, I knew the Joe Cocker version of Help From My Friends earlier than I did the original writers. And it must have been because I think there was a TV show called like Grace Under Fire or something, and the Joe Cocker version was the theme song. So I knew that. And Mum was a big Joe Cocker fan. And, you know, the classic 80s best of albums, we had Joe Cocker, Van Morrison, Cat Stevens. Trying to think if there's any other essentials.
Simon Garfunkel.
I was trying to think about that. Well, I don't know how much we had. But those three were ubiquitous in the Australian discography of your car, of the tapes in your car. But I knew Joe Cocker way better than I did the Beatles. But it's like when I'm 64, that's your octopus's garden. It's like, yeah, okay. And I don't know why Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, I'm like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were chatting to someone recently, and they said it might be their favourite Beatles song, which
I don't think, take him out to pasture.
Yeah. But it's such a kind of, I think we, again, might have said this before, where Lucy in the Sky feels like such a kind of too on the nose depiction of that psychedelic experience.
Yeah, now, it's sort
of, now, yeah, this kind of almost. Yeah.
It's like they would use it in The Simpsons for a montage, you know, yeah, psychedelic montage or something.
But it's, yeah, I don't know. It's still magic. I love it.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, it's just not my album. It's not my album. Yeah. I'm not saying it's a bad album. I'm saying it's not for me.
I was finding, I didn't realise until relatively recently that James Joyce is on the cover of Sgt. Pepper, but he's very, very hidden. He's just under Bob Dylan, and you can only see a bit of his forehead. And I thought that was interesting, because Lennon often said in a couple of places he loved Joyce, or when he read Joyce, he said he'd found God, but it's very debatable, or found Dad, I think, something like that.
Oh, really?
But it's very debatable whether he'd actually read Ulysses and stuff, but... I read a really very much of a reaching comment somewhere that Good Morning was meant to be a bit of a Ulysses because it's about a man waking up in the morning and going for a walk. I mean, come on.
It's a journey, mate. It's an odyssey.
It is an odyssey. It is an odyssey, yeah.
What do you know about walks? Oh, hang on. We've been in lockdown for a year. We know all about walks.
Do you have a controversial Beatles opinion? We ask all our guests if there's a kind of Beatle take you have that you kind of say. Is Wild Honey Pie your favourite Beatles song or something like that?
I don't care for Hey Jude, mostly because I've spent too much time in karaoke bars.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just, when I hear it, I'm like, oh, God, someone's going to join in. Oh shit! Can I tell? This has got almost nothing to do with it, except that there's loosely related to John Lennon. But this is one of my favourite being around British people moments, and it was 2007, and I was in Barcelona. I wasn't living here by then. I was on like a real find yourself Saturn Returns 27. Just left my fiance, stopped drinking, travelling the world, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and I was at the Park Güell, and it must have been 32, 33 degrees. And at the time, 33 degrees was very hot for the UK. Now, of course, we see at least one of those per year. So there's all these really red, lobster swollen British tourists, and they were pressed up against the pylons of this shaded area. And there was a guitarist there, a busker, and he was playing Imagine. And they all seemed like they were almost dead. Like everyone's walking around except for all these really red, burnt British people. You knew they were British. And then it got to the bit on Imagine all the people living life today. And all of these people just got animated. Like all of the Brits just raised their head, and in unison, about 20 of them went, ooh, and they put their head back down. That was 14 years ago, and it is one of my favourite memories of anything that's ever happened to me.
It's pretty impossible not to do.
I remember once overhearing someone singing Heroes by David Bowie. It was someone in a dressing room somewhere sort of slightly showing off that they had quite a good voice. And they started with, I wish I could fly like dolphin. And you sort of realised then. Dolphins can fly.
Hang on,
no, yeah.
Oh, that's so great.
I was going to, before you go, I was going to ask you about the show Wakefield. So can you tell us about that? We can give it a bit of a plug maybe. And I don't know if it's going to be on in the UK. But
I don't know either. Because COVID stopped everything, I'm sure there will be ways that you can watch it that are definitely not legal, which I keep saying. I should stop plugging it that way. But look, that's the show that I went out for last year to film when I had a very young baby. It is an 8-part psychological thriller, mystery, slash very dark comedy slash musical.
Wow.
Wow.
It sounds
kind of Twin Peaks-y, or is it?
Yeah. It's the best show I've ever been involved in. It's cool. One of the best dramas I've seen in years. I don't know if it's because it was so hard at the time that we gave up so much to be a part of the show, and then production got shut down because of COVID, and then I had to fly back out 4 months later and leave my family to finish filming. I don't know what it is, but I don't know if that has influenced it, but it got released on our version of iPlayer last week, I think it was, the Easter weekend, and it was like number one watched show on iView over the weekend, and it got like 5 stars in The Guardian, and it starts on TV this week. So it's the first time ever that they've put the entire series on the streaming platform first.
Right, yeah.
But the TV show will also air week to week as of this Sunday. So,
and what channel is that for our lovely Australian listeners?
That's for our Australian listeners, possibly New Zealand listeners. It's an 8-part, they're 1-hour episode, and it's set in a psychiatric hospital, and it's focused around one of the nurses there called Nick, who's played by a British actor called Rudy Dalmalingan, doing a very convincing Australian accent, which has been noted many times by many people because it's a very difficult accent to do. Yeah. So,
no, it isn't. And so what's the musical element then? Are you singing in it or are you...?
No, there's just... it's sort of... it is two... demonstrate Nick sort of slowly losing his mind and the blur between fantasy and reality. I think there's probably 3 musical outbreaks, like with dance sequences, but then there's also tap dancing throughout the whole thing. It's tap dancing is sort of a motif from the first episode. And that, you know, you sort of, it becomes clear why. Nothing is in there accidentally.
That sounds great.
Sounds amazing. I can't wait to see it.
It's very un-British, but I think it's amazing. I really think it's amazing. Yeah. And I bawled my eyes out when it was finished, and I think it's a beautiful piece of television. And the response by people who have mental illness, people who have been in psychiatric hospitals, people who have nursed in psychiatric hospitals has been overwhelmingly positive. The only thing is that people who are going through a tough time, it can be a little bit triggering and confronting because, I mean, I had postnatal depression, and the first episode, one of the patients has postnatal depression, and I was playing a nurse, so I'm like, oh, this is really not intense at all. This is just a very relaxed job.
Yeah. Wow. It sounds so good. I'm sure it definitely sounds like it'll get picked up over here.
I hope so. Yeah. I hope so. Yeah. As I said, like, because of COVID happened, all the festivals and TV festivals that we usually sell shows at, they were all shut down. So usual ways and means had been postponed. And people, I suppose, were panicking about where they were going to spend their money outside of their country.
That's great. We'll look forward to seeing it. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, because I really loved your show, What If There's No Toilet?
And
I was trying to think of an IBS Beatles kind of Venn diagram, but I really was stumped by that. I don't know.
Come on, there's got to be life.
Run for your life.
Hang on.
There is a great interview with Paul McCartney where he's definitely got, well, I think he's got food poisoning from about 62, 64, which is quite relatable.
He's very
stoically
trying to do this sort of...
But there's a bit where he kind of looks away, oh, Jesus Christ.
What about Get Back?
Yeah.
I'm just looking through their songs. Twist and Shout, that would also.
Yeah.
I think that's probably it. That's probably it.
Well, you know, do write in if you've got any.
All right. We've got Shirley on the line.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Indeed. That's great.
So that was the brilliant Felicity Ward. She was fantastic, brilliantly funny. I definitely recommend checking out her stand-up and the show Wakefield, which we talked about a lot at the end there.
Yeah.
Brilliant episode. Not the most Beatles-heavy we've done, but...
I think I'd laughed more in that episode than I have in any other episode. And, you know, You know that thing where you hate hearing the sound of your own voice?
Yeah, intimately.
Yeah. I've got that, obviously, but I also, it's particularly bad. I hate the sound of my own laugh kind of more.
Right.
And so listening back to that was like, oh my God, I hate myself more than it normal. You know, because I was laughing so much on this, and she was very, very funny.
Yeah, she's brilliant. If you haven't had the chance to see her do stand-up, it's highly recommended. She's absolutely brilliant.
She's great.
So, yeah, thank you very much for listening. If you want to check out an extended version of that, if you're not on the Patreon, then you can sign up and do so. There's a great sort of extra 15, 20 minutes in there. Mm. And, yeah, it's all gold. And thanks. Thanks very much for listening. And we're going to be back next week. We've got a really good chat with Nish Kumar.
Yeah, it was a really good chat. It was really good to catch up with Nish and talk. He's so passionate about music, and I think get the impression he loves
it. Yeah, he talks about it brilliantly.
He does. He's so articulate. There were some points where it's just like, just didn't know what to say because he just basically summed everything up so brilliantly well. You're just, he's so funny off the cuff as well. It was a really good episode. Looking forward to putting it out.
I was quite firmly in the depth of having COVID at the time.
Yeah.
So I was a little bit quiet and... But actually, a lot of that listening back to it was just, he was just so brilliant. You find that you forget you're recording a podcast because you're just listening to him being, as you say, very sort of erudite. And it's a fantastic one. So looking forward to that next week. And we'll all have our first bonus episode coming out as well. So, check out the Patreon for that one. That'll arrive towards the end of this week. Mm-hmm. So, it should be a lot of fun.
Cool.
Good stuff. We'll see you next week.
See you then.
Cheers, mate.
Bye.
Bye. Your Own Personal Beatles is presented by Jack Pelling and Robin Allender. The podcast artwork is done by Morgan Ritchie. It's produced by me, Jack Pelling, and is a Homespun Sounds production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.